Hello, I'm James Fitzsimons, and welcome to the Career Scoop, a podcast all about career progression, advice, and experiences aimed at assisting those who are in career transition themselves. My guest today is Michael McAteer, National Managing Partner of Grant Thornton. He joined the firm in 1999 and is the current Managing Partner for Grant Thornton Ireland. After previously leading the firm's advisory services offering, he has specialized in all forms of insolvency and corporate recovery across numerous industries, including construction, retail, telecoms, banking, and aviation, amongst others. Mick, you're very welcome to the Career Scoop.
Thanks, James. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I know you've been very kind, but this is your last day before you take summer vacation, so really appreciate that.
No problem at all. Hopefully we will get a break this summer, post-COVID.
So, you might just give the very quick overview of you know, so who you are and how you got to who you are and what you've done and your route.
Sure. Well, how I got here now, that's a good one. I sometimes wonder that myself. But my route, I think, was quite an interesting one, maybe slightly different. So first of all, sorry, my name is Michael McAteer, and I'm the managing partner of Grant Thornton, one of the largest professional services firms in Ireland. And I've had the role for just over 4.5 years in a 6-year term. But I suppose that has been a culmination of a I won't call it a long career because that sounds like I'm old, but certainly an interesting career over the last number of years. Right back to I left school at 17 and didn't actually have sufficient points at the time to go to university. So I went off and got my, I was lucky enough to get an apprenticeship in a firm called Farrell Grant Sparks at the time. And then I commenced an accounting technician nighttime course, which gave me an exemption for the professional exams in the chartered structure. So I did that and I managed then to pass all my exams first time. So I was qualified at 21 and a half, which is actually probably unusual because I think nowadays most of our graduates would only be leaving university at 22 or 23 to start their professional career. So it was quite a unique thing at the time. And I'm not too sure we will see that in the current kind of era.
Wow. And what was the training like back then? I mean, I know you graduated obviously into the restructuring and solvency space. What was the training like?
I think the training certainly was different and will show the age because there was no computers. It was pencils and it was paper. And I do think we've kind of slightly maybe missed something of that as well, because having an old, what was known at the time as an extended trial balance, where literally you could see how a company's profit and loss account interacted with its balance sheet, and how journals were made and how all of the transactions moved in sequence and together to ultimately produce a set of accounts. It was a visual document that sat in the front of any audit file. And of course, now with computers, you enter data and you don't get to see behind the scenes all of that kind of nuts and bolts that come together. So I think it's something that, I mean, you know, progress is progress and you'd never go back because what we have today is so much more efficient. But from a training perspective, that visualization, doing tasks, sitting down with a senior member and doing individual components, opening up shoeboxes, taking out invoices, looking at them, understanding all the components of a working business. You know, progress has occurred. We've moved on from there, but it was different, I think, than from today's training.
And you talked about a working business because most of your career has been, I suppose, supporting businesses that might be in the emergency room or unfortunately might have failed. Why does a business fail?
I think businesses can probably fail for a number of different reasons. One is the wider economic scenario has changed. You know, you're involved in a business where it just changes. And I think if we look in today's environment, you know, retail is going through that stage at this moment in time where online shopping, people have moved from that the move to more convenience and having things delivered to the door. And therefore the retail shop has to change its operation and mode of operation to do something different than just physically sell stock from a shelf. So that's an example of the environment has changed and therefore the business, a certain quantum of businesses won't be able to adapt to that and will fail. I think you've got scenarios where poor management, where a rising tide can allow a company to succeed, but it's because everybody's succeeding. And then when something happens, a blip happens, only those that are well managed, well capitalized, and that can react to the circumstances will survive, and those that can't will fail as well. And then you can have, you know, something like we had between 2008-2014, where just the wider economy collapses and consumer confidence evaporates. There's a tightening in the fiscal availability of credit. But that, you know, that's a 1 in 20 year phenomenon that I, you know, we were probably due one of them in the early 2000s. We didn't have it. And therefore, when we did have ours in late 2008, 2009, it was probably far greater than it should have been if we had had a correction earlier on in the 2000s.
And do you see at the moment now with the stock market has taken, the tech stocks taking a hit, rising inflation, unfortunate kind of events happening elsewhere in Ukraine and other places. Do you see any great clouds or storm clouds coming our way? Or
I think we are definitely at a crossroads. And it's interesting. And I think, you know, first of all, businesses and the commercial environment likes certainty. It can actually deal with bad news as long as they know what the bad news is, and therefore they can plan and they can adapt accordingly. Uncertainty is something that you know, commercial operations just hate to know. So Ukraine 12 weeks ago, the shock of it, and this sounds terrible, and I don't mean it in a disrespectful way, but 12 weeks later, people have now got used to that news and are now adapting accordingly. And it has moved into a funny kind of just a operating model or modem how we go forward. So what happens in Ukraine, I think the next reaction to that will be is something happens. So in other words, there's an escalation in the conflict in some shape, form or manner. And of course, we're in the summer period, where the winter period and the oil prices and gas flows. And if there's a interruption to supplies, that will definitely have a huge impact. So Ukraine most certainly is having an impact. Inflation, I think, is something that's probably more right in front of us. And if something doesn't occur there, I certainly see that having a significant impact again in the consumer confidence. And consumer confidence feeds into all aspects of our business model. And if people stop spending, then the knock-on effect will be quite quickly thereafter. I think we saw back again 2008, 2009, how quickly consumer confidence can disappear. I think the fact that we've come through a two-year period of COVID, where personal savings, for those that are lucky enough to have savings, have cushioned them on the inflationary impact. But that's a period of time that will not last forever. And I would say, unless inflation has got under control within the next 8 to 12 months, that is probably the biggest danger that we're facing as an Irish economy.
Okay, and I'm sorry for that serious question, because I'm just curious. It broke in the papers over the weekend. I'm curious to hear someone's, because you're getting feedback from clients, and you've been in that, I suppose, that where you're trying to support companies stay alive, or they haven't. You've been supporting them in effect exiting. I've heard that there's some really good news for Grant Thornton Ireland, and you're expanding, if I can use that word, abroad.
We are indeed.
A little bit about that.
Yes, well, part of our strategy has been over the last kind of 2.5-3 years is to look at markets where we believe that they're complementary to what we do in Ireland. And we, in 2021, purchased the Grant Thornton practice in the Isle of Man. That was the partner there was retiring. We felt it was a good opportunity for us to learn the ropes of moving overseas, taking on another territory, and then implementing our systems, procedures, and processes. And we were quite lucky that Ireland is, you know, remote, quite located quite close to us, so therefore it was a nice small practice. So we learned lots. It was a good way to dip our toe in the water, and that was successful. We've also expanded into Cyprus, where we provide advisory services in conjunction with the Cypriot firm. It allows the Cypriot firm to sell the whole swathe of services in the advisory field, from forensics, restructuring, consulting, quants, insurance, corporate governance, without having to invest themselves in those technical expertise. And we have them here in Ireland, and therefore collectively we can provide those services on the island in conjunction with the Cypriot firm. And we are about to complete, hopefully in the next number of weeks, subject to regulatory approval, the acquisition and the merger of a firm in Bermuda. At the moment, it's Arthur Morrison Company. It's a correspondence firm that works with Grant Thornton International, but it will become a fully-fledged office of the Irish practice in Bermuda.
So will you get a chance to visit the lovely island of Bermuda a few times, maybe?
I hope so. I was lucky enough to be there about 4 or 5 weeks ago, and it's certainly a beautiful island. People are just so welcoming and friendly, and I think we're quite excited. We met a number of businesses and potential clients on the islands, and I think they will welcome another competitor and a different voice maybe. So everywhere we went, we got very much open arms and welcome to Bermuda. So we're looking forward to that challenge.
And you know, we have a listenership in Bermuda. So hopefully when this goes live, that deal will be completed and people will then be able to ring you up. The type of people now, I mean, the need for talent, to try to find talent. What are you looking for in that young person, or not just a young person in the firm? Because you have a lot of experience. You've seen people come through over the years that you guys curate them, you give them the experience, they might move on and they end up wherever they end up, you know. But what are you looking for now?
Well, there are kind of two models that we look for. We have a very much a graduate program, which kind of speaks to the people you spoke with there. So, you know, every year we will take on somewhere between 300 and 350 graduates. Wow. in various skills. And the graduate will have expressed an interest maybe in audit, tax advisory, or an advisory. Again, it's such a broad church. It can be a myriad of different careers within that. They're signing up for a 3.5 to 4 year apprenticeship contract. You know, our job and our duty, custodian of the profession, is to make sure we turn them into the best that they possibly can be. And for that to occur, what we're always looking for are candidates who maybe stand out a bit different. They've shown a work ethic. They have worked part time during summer months or while they were in college. They have interests outside of work. So whether that be in the sporting field or the music field or drama or whatever, but there's more to the person than just an academic viewpoint. And somebody that shows that they want to actually be involved and add value to the practice. So again, we would always be interested in, you know, somebody who shows as some kind of spirit or initiative that wants to get involved and be more than just somebody who turns up at 9 o'clock and disappears again at 5:15 in the evening time. So it's about bringing something, your full self to the work environment. Because I think if you do that, you'll get far more enjoyment out of it. And the scope and breadth of your experience will be far, far, far greater. And then, of course, with the people who are qualified, and maybe we're looking for subject matter experts in different fields. So there's somebody who is, you know, probably more likely to be late 20s into the 30s. And that's a different expertise and probably, as I said, subject matter expert that you're looking for. So that tends to move much more towards the technical skills that person can bring, and how they will augment into our organization. But culturally, it's the number one thing. If we feel culturally they're not going to be a fit, then, you know, they won't be in the consideration, because what we have found is we make it wrong choice culturally, not technically, but culturally, we'll end up parting ways within a 12 to 18 month period anyway.
And that's your experience, I presume, for unfortunate people who may not, just doesn't land right or doesn't yep. work the right way. And it's great to talk with you who didn't go to the third level. And it's not just, you're great you didn't go to the third level, but the opportunity and the path you took. And for those people who maybe put off that, I don't have that kind of UCD degree, you know, you're open to the human, but that human has to be able to front up, is a bit innovative and creative, has a voice, can talk, and not afraid of a bit of old hard work.
Absolutely. And shows a desire and a wish to succeed.
Okay. It's interesting. Can I bring you back to your career? What's the mistakes, the funny stories, if you can if you can share them, that we've all had them, you know, and I suppose the question I asked is because never be afraid to make a mistake, but try not to make it twice, you know, in that sense. I remember just my own, when I was training as a chartered accountant, which I didn't complete, but I remember leaving the, at a very eminent client, leaving the board meeting book, which was a physical book on the photocopier, and leaving it there with all the sensitive information in the of the company, and then realizing when I got back to the audit room and running back down out of breath to the photocopier and seeing the chief executive with the board minutes in his hand, he said, "Did you forget something?" And he gave it back to me and he said, "I bet you'll never do that again." And he didn't say anything more and just moved on. I didn't do that again. And I still have sweats about that. But is there anything you want to share that's a bit of fun?
I'm lucky enough to have lots of stories of fun from running nightclubs in Sligo, and realizing quite quickly that we could make far more money if the bar opened between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. rather than the laws that were allowed by the land. So that was an exercise that I managed to run and keep under the radar of my manager, but he was quite surprised and pleased that takings had gone up by a factor of two when I was sent down to run that place. But I think one of the ones where I learned was that when you're doing a liquidation, you've got what's known as a creditors meeting, and the creditors meeting is when the creditors come and vote to appoint a liquidator. And I, the day before a creditors meeting, had the proxy forms, which was used to appoint the partner at the time to be liquidator. But I was also invited to a bit of a long lunch, and I had a little Nissan Micra, which I parked just off O'Connell Street, with the intention of leaving it there overnight. And in my briefcase in the back seat, put the proxy forms, and turned up the next morning to find the boot of the car open and the briefcase gone and the proxy forms missing. And trying to explain to the partner who was about to be elected that the votes to elect him were probably somewhere sitting in a flat in Sean McDermott Street didn't go down that well for my career at the time.
And first of all, you had to tell him, and then his reaction, and then how did you solve it? Because it has to be solved.
It was solved by basically going to the meeting, and luckily it wasn't a contentious meeting, and I did have a record of all the proxies. So the solicitor at the time asked me, would I swear a declaration that they were the proxy forms and that they were all in order? So I did so. But I got away with it. Let's put it that way.
I say you never leave anything work-wise in the car. Ever again.
Correct.
Overnight, which is great. Have you had a mentor or a number of mentors over your work life?
I think that's important as well, that mentors come in different guises. And so my first mentor actually was an uncle of mine who had a milk delivery business. And I used to work for him when I was 13 or 14. All the way through and summer jobs and weekend work. But that was my first experience of customer service, of his ability. He had a round of around 600 people. He was an independent milkman. He was one of the first, but he knew every customer. He knew what milk they got. He knew. So when you'd walk up, he'd be able to say, you know, he'd say, okay, this is 2 pints, can pint of milk, a pint of cream on a Sunday and eggs on a Tuesday. Always there, always knew what the customer was getting, and had that conversation. And in one bad weather back in the summer of 81, I think it was, when Premier Dairies actually couldn't get milk in, he went up to Drogheda and Dundalk and purchased milk directly from the dairy. And we came down and we took 3 days' milk, and we went around that estate and knocked on every door, because milk was a scarce resource at the time. I handed over the milk, and it just the reaction from the customer, the link between the customer and the supplier. I just remember the following Christmas, I got tips of about £80 as a 14 or 15 year old, and every one of them that said, "We remembered last Christmas," and it was a lesson to me in just how customer service, how people appreciate when you go out of the way, you do something different, and you understand a simple product of milk and how important it can be to people's lives. So that was just, that's just a mentor, but certainly it was my first exposure of customers. And I've been very lucky in all my life, the partners and mentor and senior people who I've always learned something from somebody. And I think that's something you should always kind of, you know, it's just look up, see something, observe, and take what you like and add it to your own toolbox, toolkit as you go along. But I've had plenty of mentors from Pierce Farrell, from Farrell Grant Sparks. I went to Australia. I had a huge mentor, a lady called Erica Kanashta, who worked for one of the banks down there, who's a project manager. Different skill set, different mindset. I was exposed to something completely different. But throughout my career, I've been extremely lucky, James.
Wow. And that formative experience with the uncle, because, you know, that's a school experience, if I can use in that sense. And he obviously had everything in his head as well. It probably wasn't written down.
Nope.
He knew everybody's name. It was organized. He was on time. You're as good as your last client, not your next client. And it's trying to keep, and such in such a simple way. Any funny stories from, you know, you being the young fella and, you know, people trying to shortchange you, or, you know, I'm just thinking, you know.
Shortchange him? No, in fairness, he ran a tight shop and again, we had a great client base, but I do remember it. I must have been 14 or 15, and he says, okay, do you fancy driving the truck? Because I would have been the jumper, and we'd go down, and of course, the truck would be back there, and he was thinking, well, if I can get him to drive the truck 40 meters, or it will be more efficient. So 4 o'clock in the morning on an old Bedford flatbed truck, put it into gear, and we did the bunny hops. And as the bunny hops was happening, the crates were flying off the back of the truck. I think we lost about 9 crates of milk in the space of about 40 meters. So I was not asked to drive the truck again.
Okay. That's, again, I suppose, yeah, that's a lovely experience. And it happens. Stuff happens because, you know, but you have to have a goal, but maybe not now at 14. That mightn't be with social media particularly. It mightn't land so well. Managing part of the Grand Thornton. Did you know about this? On top of kind of directing the firm. How do you, like, you have a whole lot of communication coming at you, lots of people. How do you switch off? What's your, or do you need to? Some people, it doesn't bother them. I'm just curious, you know.
I don't think you, and you know, in I think in, if you, if everybody's been honest, you don't really switch off. You know, so you mentioned I'm off on holidays, but look, my email will be on. It's then about how do you manage your time and ensure that you get some downtime, but at the same time, still keep on top of your brief. So I've, over the years, got myself into a routine where I'll do an hour in the morning, usually do about an hour at lunchtime, kill off whatever needs to happen, and then do an hour in the evening time, 5-6 o'clock, and clear the day and then start again. So it's about that balance, because to be honest, if I didn't do that, I'd only be thinking about it and I wouldn't be switched off. At least if I do it that way, I get my downtime in between. I feel nothing is going on that I'm not on top of. But at the same time, I'm getting a break because it's a different environment and you are getting those hours. So I'm comfortable with that. Works for me. Everybody's different. Some people need to have completely and switch off the phone. I understand that, but that's just not me in that sense. So I think everybody has to do whatever works for them.
Maybe the impact or some of the impact doesn't land. It lands with everybody slightly differently.
Yes.
And how they process that.
Look, I think one thing we've learned over the last 2.5 years and with COVID is everybody is a unique individual, and everybody, COVID impacted on them and their family and how the relationship would work in an individual basis. And one size does not fit all. And I think that probably just brought home what was always there anyway, but it just became, you know, the work from home works for some people, doesn't work for the work from office works for some people, doesn't work for some people. And the hybrid works for some people as well. And you've just got to adapt to make sure what works for the individual and at the same time ensuring that the business can get done.
And how can you now mind your people that you're at the top of post COVID? What have you learnt from and you've articulated some of the kind of people of preference to work, but just keep an overarching approach.
I think, first of all, you start at the top in the sense that the business can survive in the digital environment. So it's functionally can be done. So productivity and the product output can happen. But that can maybe mask some of the more interesting things that are going on below that. I do think our trainees struggled substantially over the last 2 year period. The ability just to sit beside somebody, ask questions, observe, listen, all of those skills that you get weren't really and are not suited towards the digital environment. So that's why we've got to make sure, now that where we are, we get our trainees back and we make sure that we have sufficient experience in the building while they're in, that they can learn and have a good career as far as they're concerned. I think we've learned that everybody has affected everybody in very different ways, and we've got to be flexible as an institution to make sure that we can try and adapt and get the most out of people in an environment that they want to work on, but also be very honest with them and explain to them that if we need them in the office for particular days, that's what needs to happen as well. So it's everybody's got to compromise and communicate and when you're asking them to come in, you're explaining why it is, not just I need you in the office, because some people think, well, I can do my job from home. Maybe they can do their job, but they may not then understand the wider picture of culture and training and development as well. So it's having honest, frank, upfront discussions, which may not be, which may lead to a strong discussion, but I think it's best to have them rather than just issue diktats.
Yeah, okay. So it's listening and would you have it like, I'm curious, like yours or other firms where you're, that there's people listening throughout the organization and listening is just observing and watching and how so-and-so performing from the point of view, are they in good form, bad form? Because as we all found, being on Zoom or Microsoft Teams, it can suck your brain out because it's just for everybody. It's not, and some people can go out and jump in the water or go for a walk, they're fine. Other people, it takes a bit longer to get themselves back to where they are.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think when you're in an office environment, it's much easier to observe and see when maybe people are having dark times or bad time. While in the digital environment, as an organization and as senior people within our team need to make sure that they are on the front foot reaching out to people rather than waiting for people to come to them.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, and you got to equip them to be able to have that bandwidth also to mind themselves. Yep. And sometimes that manager gets overwhelmed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Isn't that? Go back to be that 18-year-old again, professional. Milkman extraordinaire. You probably had your license at that stage and got plenty of miles up on the clock. If you had your time again, is there anything else you'd say, gosh, I wouldn't mind having a go at that? It could be anything. Could be a mixologist, which cocktail maker, to be a neurosurgeon, to... I'm just curious to say, gosh, I wish I'd have a go at that.
I'm a lover of technology and problem solving. Technology is probably one thing I just, I'm always looking at issues and problems and trying to devise technical solutions to that, whether it's products, whether it's coding. And while I'm not a coder, I have kind of over the years, just it's the way my brain is wired. So I think if I wasn't in the professional services, I think I probably would be in the technology business.
So, and this might be a bit, a hacker, maybe,
No, problem solving. Problem solving, not causing problems.
I'm sure you can have good hackers. I presume there's good hackers. They can't all be bad, I presume, in that sense, you know. And again, I know you're hugely successful in the sense of in the firm and, talking to a few people like you, which is lovely to hear. And I don't mean in that sense, it's nice. Obviously, how your humanity presents is how it presents, and that's the way that is. So, five words to describe your career to date. My last question.
Five words. I think it's you've got to start off. It's been fun. It is fun. I think if you don't enjoy what you do, well, then you shouldn't be doing it. Because you spend more time in work than you do probably doing anything else in your life. Certainly in any week. So if you're not enjoying yourself at that time, I don't know how you can enjoy yourself when you've finished your job. So you've got to have fun. You've got to do that. I think it's been varied, which again, I think is just something in my my way that as soon as I get bored, as soon as I feel I can't add value, that it's just moving now into something the same as it was last week. Again, I start to lose the fun aspect of that. Challenging. I love a challenge. And again, it gets back to, if I feel I've succeeded in solving problem A, I am immediately looking for problem B. If I don't have a problem to solve, I'm not happy. Because that's what kind of, I suppose, gives you that adrenaline rush and doing that and leads to being satisfied. I love, whether it's an insolvency assignment, whether it's a product that we've put in place in a completion of an acquisition, with the moment the job is finished, looking back and saying, done, great, happy with that. So that the gratification you get from completing a piece of work is something that gives me great enjoyment. And probably the most important thing is it's not over yet.
It's not over yet. Oh, listen, they're wonderful words. I'm going to slip one more question in. Is there any problem or any that you've solved that you're most proud of? Now, it doesn't have to be kind of taking over the world. I'm just saying, is anything over the last couple of years that you've just, something presented and you were able to just go in and make it happen, and that lovely, it could be simple. I'm just curious, something that might pop to mind that just would resonate.
I think probably one of the most satisfying jobs, which was an extremely difficult and quite a tense job at the time, was the Quinn Insurance job, because we were appointed in March 2010. There was 2,500 people located in Fermanagh, in Eskin, Blanchardstown, Manchester, and it was in the very much the high profile and the pressure that comes with being involved in such a job as well, and trying to get your head around it, the size of the job, and then the issues that kind of came very, I'd say, relatively quickly thereafter, in the sense that you know the black hole that was within the insurance company started to become more apparent, and then the ability for us to be able to market this firm and company to a third party and save as many jobs as possible was really, it was getting in, you know, the pressure was there. I've never probably felt kind of that pressure on me, just feeling it that maybe this was not going to be a happy ending or a successful ending for so many people. Huge amount of people there that I would meet every day, and they'd be looking at you, and you can any news and confidentiality and lots of other stuff going on that's well publicized in the newspaper, and quite a tense scenario. And I think ultimately for us to be able to get Liberty Mutual into Ireland to take on the business, and at the times, you know, secure 1,650 jobs, was, when I look back at it, it was a long period of my life, but it was something I'm immensely proud of.
But Michael, I'm very, very thankful for you coming and talking today and sharing your career to date. I think there's some great people that get some great insights. And I think the one that sits with me again, it's that your L plate at the time, driving a milk truck. I say you've never made that mistake again in the bunny hops.
Absolutely not. Thanks, James. It's been enjoyed it very much, immensely.
Thanks very much. I'm James Fitzsimons, and I hope you've enjoyed listening. Bye.